Welcome to the 2012 Global Convention of Compulsive Eaters Anonymous HOW, The Gifts of See HOW. My name is Lynn, and I'm a compulsive eater and the leader for this workshop.
Hi, Lynn.
Will you please join me in the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Today, this session is being taped. If you choose to participate in any discussion in this session, you must sign this form granting Compulsive Eaters Anonymous HOW specific rights in taping your voices. Like I said, I'm Lynn. I'm a compulsive eater. I've been in the program since June 2005 and have had continued medical abstinence since June 23rd, 2007, and I attend meetings in the Reno-Sparks area. And I'd like to introduce you to Jan, my food sponsor. Sorry, I forgot something. The workshop today is called The Principles, and I'd like to read you the 12th step. It says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive eaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And I said, what principles? Where are they written? So we got them off the wall at the AA meeting, and I called up some more AA people to make sure that they were the correct principles. And for those people listening to the video, step one principle is honesty, step two is hope, step three is faith, step four is courage, step five is integrity, step six is willingness, step seven is humility. Step eight is love. Step nine, discipline. Step 10 is patience and perseverance. Step 11 is awareness. And step 12 is service. And here is Jan.
Good morning. I'm Jan. I am definitely a compulsive eater. And I am, I've been in the program since July 10th, 2004, with continuous back-to-back abstinence only through the grace of God. Attend meetings in Arizona, in the northwest corner, Kingman, Bullhead City. And we have meetings in both of those places. And so today I'm here under duress because I had to set an example for my sponsee. She says, oh, Jan, would you help us tomorrow? And I'm like, okay. I had to set an example because, that's what I do. And I think the big thing for me as far as the principles is service, because service is what keeps me here. But I got to thinking back where I came from, and I'd like to pass out my little pictorial history starts a long, long time ago. But my compulsive eating I wasn't aware of until when I was 9 years old. There was a major change in my life when my mother passed away from a terminal illness, and didn't know until 60 years later that this was I interpreted it as abandonment, which I didn't know. And then my dad got very, very busy trying to keep the family together. And then he started seeing other women, and then he got married, and then I had lost my dad too. And then I really really got into compulsive eating. And this went on all through my adulthood. And I learned all kinds of wonderful behaviors that, stealing and lying and all those good things. Not to mention eating. And every year I would just gain more and more. I didn't think I was heavy because I could still buy clothes. And when I became an adult, I got married, I had kids, and I had three children, and being pregnant were the best times of my life because nobody knew how fat I really was. And I could say, oh, I'm going to have a baby. Yeah. They always thought the baby was going to be about 80 pounds because of the size of me. Fortunately, they were only all around 9 pounds. So, and as time went on, I stayed heavy, up and down with the yo-yo diets, 30 on, 30 off, 40 on, 20 off. And when I was about to approach the age of 60, I said, I'm not going to turn 60 weighing 220 pounds. I will not do it. So I found the diet of all diets. And it was the high-fat, high-protein, low-carb diet. And I actually lost 40 pounds. And I nearly got sick doing it. And then I was really, really dedicated to this diet. But then I took that first bite. And that's when it all went. That first bite became 2 bites, it became 12 bites, it became forever and ever, and every day it was like, well, I'll get back on tomorrow. So, you know, a lot of folks talk about having slips or relapses when they're in this program. It works in all parts of our lives, I'm sure. It did in mine. And this was, I remember this vividly, and that's what keeps me on track with this program. And I was very blessed. I was working in an institution when I was on this other diet, and I had taken my first bite, excuse me, and started gaining a pound a week. So the weight was coming right back on. Pardon me. I started, I had already given away all my big clothes. My size 20s and 18s and all those were gone. And I couldn't afford to replace that wardrobe because I was out in the business world. So I thought, I got to do something. And there was a gal in our hospital that everybody had been on diets. And so was she. And she had lost 60 or 80 pounds, and she kept it off. And she was passing by my office one day, and she says, all right, I said, you have not gained back your weight. What are you doing? And she said, I go to a 12-step program. And I'm like, duh, what's that? I don't know. I had heard of AA. I had never heard of anything else as far as a 12-step program. And I thought, I'm not an alcoholic. What would I do? And she said, we're having a meeting tonight if you want to come. And I said, yeah, I'll go. And 2 days later, I was abstinent, and she was my sponsor. And bless her heart, she was the sponsor that God wanted me to have because she worked, let me learn the principles on my own. She let me do, where's step one? I'm not going to go through all of this. Honesty is the first one. And that was a tough one for me, but she helped me through all of these. Then, unfortunately, she was no longer able to sponsor me, and so I kind of struggled finding another sponsor that I clicked with. So, I continued committing my food and to whoever would listen, and I was doing writing, although I wasn't committing it to anybody. And I just continued on, and then I finally found a sponsor. I was at this point, I needed a step sponsor. And so I found this gal online because she kind of lives in Europe. And but she became a wonderful sponsor for me. we sponsored on Skype and emails, and it was just wonderful. She got me through all of my steps, and that's where I got, that's where I got my, you know, they just went along, the courage to change, the courage to do what I needed to do. That's where I learned integrity. I learned to be honest. I ended up redoing my inventory because I couldn't identify any, you know, from doing it the first time, I couldn't identify any defects. Yeah. Well, yeah. I remember stealing one time and kind of stretching the truth a few times, and I'm like, And she said, maybe you ought to redo your inventory. So I redid my inventory, and she gave me these little worksheets, and I started writing and writing and writing. And when it came time to have the honesty, the integrity, the willingness, and the humility to admit these defects, that was a turning point in my life. And this is also about the point that I started liking myself just a little bit. You know, I was the person I wanted to see in the mirror, but I still saw this fat, ugly person, not image. The image I was happy with. I still didn't believe it, but I was kind of happy with it. And that's when I learned to love myself. And it wasn't until I learned to love myself that I was able to love others. I've been married be 40 years in April, and to the same man. It's amazing. And it wasn't always, I didn't always want to be there. And there was a point in my life where I, you know, not a point, a lot of points. I spent a lot of time at work. Today I know why. It wasn't because I was so dedicated. I was running. I was trying to keep myself busy so I didn't have to face what I had at home. I had reality at home. I had questionable relationships with, you know, it wasn't really loving relationships with my family. I was an abusive parent. I had been an abused child. And it all carried over. And I was also an abusive wife. You know, not physically abusive. I neglected my husband. I stole from him because I was in charge of the finances. I said, he doesn't care. He says, oh, it's only money. Yeah, and I believed him. Well, now it's only debt. Today, we are still paying that price for my obsession. But today, God has taken that obsession away, and we're making it by the skin of our teeth, but we're making it. We're retired. We've been retired. And I thought, you know, I have to keep working because we can never retire. Because I had this, because the obsession would never leave while I was in a position to have something to spend. I wasn't eating, but boy, I was engaging in obsessive compulsive behavior still. And today, I retired 4 years ago, and that was the day my boss says, Jan, why are you still working? Because I was late again for a meeting with her. And I said, I don't know. I said, can I leave today? She says, no, give me 2 weeks. 2 weeks, I was out of there. And that's when I realized that was God talking to me through her, because I wasn't going to make that decision. Thank you. I wasn't going to make that decision. And God made it for me. And that was awareness for me. That was that 11th principle, awareness. Once I became aware that God was active in my life, and he was, he is today. I mean, on this trip yesterday, I found out at about 9 o'clock in the morning that I was supposed to have been here at 8:15 for the morning workshop, because I thought it was today. And this is a different workshop, and so I missed it. And I felt so bad because I was supposed to help out the leader for that one. So on the way in, I was staying with my daughter in Long Beach. I lost my way. I took the wrong turn off the freeway again. And I'm sitting there on this side street, and I was just ready to cry. I was losing it. I was just losing it. I couldn't even cry. You know, I was just like... So I just put my head back. God, help me. The son of a gun if he didn't. He showed me how to use the GPS on my phone. Because I couldn't find my other GPS, which was in the bottom of my purse, I found out this morning. And then I got a phone call. It was a lady who wants to come to one of our meetings in Bowhead City. And she's a CHOW longtime member who's a maintenance sponsor even. And she says, I just moved into the area. When is your meeting? And I'm like, oh, God, thank you, thank you, thank you. Because this is what we needed in our groups, was this boost. And that meeting is still there because I was able to do service. That was my original meeting 8 years ago. And through the grace of God, another gal who started that meeting 3 weeks after I did had the key to the meeting place. And because of this, she slipped a number of times, but she kept coming. And I kept meeting her there. And this was our service to each other, and this is our service to our community, because our group is slowly growing again. It was amazing. One of the original people that was in that first meeting is here at this convention, and I saw her yesterday for the first time in 5 years. And what a wonderful reunion, because she's still here too. And it's such a blessing. But I just wanted to close with service. Principle 12. This is what keeps me here. It's what keeps me abstinent. There have been, you know, the obsession with food was gone from day one, which was such a blessing. Of course, the other obsessions were still there too. But God is slowly removing all of these because I am asking Him. I mean, He will do whatever we need, but we have to ask Him. And this is what I have to do every day. And with that, I will close. And I want to thank you all for being here. And Lynn, thank you so much for asking me, because it's been a pleasure.
My name is Jean. I've been in program since July 4th, 1995, and I've had continued abstinence since July 4th, 1995. I attend meetings in Las Vegas, Nevada. That's 17 years and whatever the date is of continued abstinence. I am a compulsive eater, bulimic, anorexic. I'm happy to be here. And I got volunteered by my friend Lynn yesterday at breakfast. And when someone asked you to do something, my answer was, how much time do I have to give you an answer? She stared at me. Okay, so here I am. I have no pictures, but my story is a little different. I was born underweight. I never ate. I had projectile vomiting when I was a little kid. So they'd give me 2 ounces of milk, and I would just shoot it right back. So, and I was the firstborn, and I have one sister. So I was trouble. I heard all my life from the time I was born, because I never ate. And they were very concerned about me, and somewhere along the line, I picked up I was a bad baby. I picked that up way, way before I could express it. So and my sister came along a year and a half later and ate everything that wasn't attached, and she was happy and giggly, and I was always frowning. I see some of my pictures, and I'm always frowning. And most of my childhood wasn't good. I didn't face being obese in school. I faced being underdeveloped at school. So I got teased at school, especially when I went to school. You had to dress for PE, and so we were all together, and the girls used to make fun. I used to wear a T-shirt. So it wasn't pleasant. Plus, I wore glasses. So it wasn't, I don't want to go back to school again. It was not happy. And then when I grew up, I still wasn't eating very much. And then I discovered starving. I think I was about 15. My life at home was not pleasant. I was the one that was hit at the table by my dad. Because I didn't eat, I had to sit at the table for hours after everybody else left, eat the same food the next day. So when I was on my own, I didn't relate it until much years later, but I never had a table, kitchen table for years when I had my own place. It represented unhappiness. But because I was an anorexic, I went down to 78 pounds, and I thought I was 500, and I thought I could fly. So anorexia is just as devastating as being overweight, because I've crossed it all. And I was starving to death, and no one could tell me I was thin. My mind had shut off because it wasn't being fed. I was starving all my organs. And so I was put in a hospital and fed intravenously. I didn't have a say in that. But the anorexia, that word didn't even exist when that happened. Yes. I'm older, more mature. And then somewhere along the line, I decided that, I ran away quite a few times from my home. And I married the first man that asked me to marry him. I didn't want to hurt his feelings. I never thought I was a people pleaser. I kept saying, I'm not a people pleaser, but I thinking about it, I was. Oh, I couldn't hurt his feelings. I'll marry you. And so off we went to 3,000 miles away to New York, where the next 3.5-4 years were hell, because he was not what he said he was. He was gay, but you didn't talk about that. This is in the 60s, early 60s. And I was a damaged person, so I tried to check out permanently in that marriage twice by trying to slip my wrist, because he convinced me it was me, and I believed him. And that marriage ended in an annulment 4 years later, and then for the next 10 years, I went to therapy, and because I was scared to death of dating. I didn't date before that, so I didn't know much about men. I just was scared of them. And then the second man that came in my life was a alcoholic, and he had a violent temper, but he wasn't gay, so. Why shouldn't I marry him? You know, I didn't know any of this. He asked me to marry him. And so four marriages and divorces, or three marriages and three divorces and one annulment later, because I was always looking for someone out there to fix me. And it's an inside job. And this program is an inside job. I have to fix Jean, because Jean was broken. And I picked people that were sick. Or sicker than me, because I was going to fix them, and I didn't want to hurt their feelings, so I married them. I remember one of them, I walked down the aisle, and my head said, this is really not a good idea, Jean, but I did it anyway, you know? So I will admit, I am definitely a people pleaser. And then the last husband that I married was in program, And we both went into relapse together. We got married, and then we moved to Egypt, where there are no meetings. And I was, oh, by the way, in my early 20s, I crossed over from anorexia to bulimia. So I've gone from one end of the pendulum to the other. I can do it all. It's not a good thing, though. I don't suggest it. And I when I walked into my first meeting of a 12-step program, it was in 1978, and I was in my anorexic years. I was about 80 pounds, and there was 100 people in that meeting. It was our sister meeting, OA, and I heard my they talked at the podium, and I remember when she wasn't telling my story, but she was telling my feelings. I knew I was home. I didn't critique anybody except that nobody looked like me. But I was so sick inside. I was like DOA, dead on arrival. I had two children. I was divorced. And I was 31 years old, and I wanted to end my life. So, and I thought I was crazy. I was put on all kinds of tranquilizers over the years. But the bottom line is, that began my journey into recovery, because it was how the first 30 days was OA's food plan. It was called the gray sheet. Everybody was doing it. And I was successful on it. I had almost a year and a half of abstinence, but I made my sponsor my guide. So that was bad. So I lost my abstinence. The next 17 years, 18 years, I was up and down until I came into this program. And I will not, I'm not going to say the other program didn't work. I just didn't work it. I did first step, honesty, hope, and faith, and I never went further. I never did my fourth step in that program. But when I came in here, I was only going to do 30 days, and I was married to my last husband, and he was extremely heavy, and I was purging 7 to 8 times a day. And I was 51 years old, and my body stopped working. I was gaining weight, but I couldn't stop purging, starving, binging, purging. It was, the cycle had, it's progressive. This disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. So I went with him to our first meeting. It was an hour and a half drive one way. We lived in a little town called Deming, New Mexico, and we drove to Las Cruces, New Mexico, where there was a one CEHOW meeting. We both got the same sponsor, and I started working the questions. I'll tell you, I was not a happy camper the first 31 days on this program. I went through terrible, serious withdrawals from sugar, because everything I ate was non-fat. So honesty, I was very honest. I wanted to kill him because he was happy and I was crazy. Because I was suffering from, like, heroin withdrawal. One minute I was happy, next minute I was crying, I couldn't sleep, I couldn't stand still, and he was just, before, I'm so happy. He was a different kind of eater. He called himself a generic grazer all day long. That's all he did. And I ate him under the table as a bulimic. So we both had our different responses to the program, but I stuck with it. And the hope was, or the my deal was, 30 days I'm out of here, because I already knew about CEHOW. I already knew about it from I went to it years before, and I didn't like anybody in it. They were too mean, and so I went back to OA and went back to relapse. And anyway, when I came in here, the bottom line is that marriage was not a good marriage. That last marriage I had, and 4 years abstinence, I divorced him and gave him everything and became homeless at 55. And moved out with the clothes on my back. He was a spender on top of a, he had lots of addictions I didn't know about. And he took all, he was in charge of the finances, so I was poor and he was rich when I left. And I stayed poor. But because I knew There was, I did my homework. There was See How in Las Vegas. That was, I was going to move there because I had 4 years of abstinence and crossed two states in a car with $25 to my name in the middle of August. And I did it. I was abstinent. You can do anything abstinent. I had the courage and the faith and the hope, and I didn't even know I had any of those, but I had them. And I made a pit stop to take care of my mother for a year and a half, and I ended up joining another program so we wouldn't kill each other, because I was taking care of her. It was only going to be 6 weeks, but it turned into a year and a half. So, and I went, I was very courageous. I made her put a lock on my door because she was sabotaging my food, giving it to the grandchildren when I was working. I was taking care of her at night, working during the day. And the discipline was that I stuck to my food plan. I went to meetings. I got a sponsor. And my ex-husband is out. And I'm in for the long haul. And I never want to repeat the first year of my abstinence. I was in a little town. I never ate out the first year in this program. And my higher power took care of me because there was only one supermarket in the whole place. And it took me all day to buy my breakfast because I had to read every label on every. And by the time I got out, it was time for lunch. So I was a happy camper. And anyway, the sponsor I had, I didn't like her, but I loved her. Let me tell you, when I did the fifth step with her, what a relief. What a relief. It was like, oh, my God, she still likes me. She still, and my husband, too, we went together. We drove together. And she took us out to eat. Oh, no, I can't go to food because I changed playmates and playgrounds the first day of this program, July 4th, Independence Day. Not at that time. It was lost all my friends because they were drinking and eating, turned every potluck down, and ate at home my first day of abstinence. Now I call it my Independence Day. And I say, everybody's celebrating my birthday. But I never planned it that way. I never planned to be here that long. But I do have a discipline. I do lots of service. And I, too, just retired from my job. So I'm trying to find out what I am or who I am. And that's a long, it's going to be a long search. But I'll tell you one thing. I forgot to tell you I had a son and daughter. And we're estranged. I've made amends to them when they were in their 20s. They're in their 40s. They're not part of my life. And I have two granddaughters that I've never met since they're babies. One's 18, I think, one's 16, due to my daughter doesn't want me in her life. And rejection is protection. I have it on my refrigerator. It's also direction, new direction. So my last 10 years, I worked in the school as an aide. I got to be with middle school kids, when my grandkids were middle school age, granddaughters, and I got to be a grandma the last 4 years to little kindergarten and first grade children. So I directed my love, and it was very fulfilling. So, you know, my direction, I mean, out of rejection is a good thing. I changed it to a good thing. I'm sad they're not in my life, but it is what it is. I don't wish them ill will. I wish them the best that I have. And I do lots of service, and I encourage people to do service. I think it's very important, and I persevered through that detox. And I just got a call last night from somebody that's going through what I'm going through because of the sugar withdrawal. And I told her, I'll call her back because I was going to dinner. I said, I don't want to miss dinner. It's only an hour. So it's interesting that my calling is to, and my wrap-up is, don't leave these rooms. I don't care if you're binging. Don't leave. There is absolutely nothing out there. And every time someone goes out there, I call them my researchers. And I say, thank you for going out there and coming back. Because I keep thinking, well, maybe there is. I'm going to listen to them when they talk. And every single one of them comes back with a bonus on their body. And there's nothing out there. So I'll wrap that up with, so I'm staying in the rooms because I don't think there'll ever be an answer for compulsive eating, anorexia, or bulimia, except this program. It's arrested sometimes 1 hour at a time, depending on what day it is. But and I also, when I get depressed, I make outreach calls, and I get out of it immediately. I pick up that phone. I'm not afraid to pick up that 500-pound phone anymore. I pick it up. So I will end with that, and I'm so happy you're all here, and thank you, Lynn, for asking me to speak. It was a privilege. Thank you.
My name is Lynn. I'm a compulsive eater, and I've been in this program since June of 2005, and I have continued medical abstinence since June 23rd, 2007, and I attend meetings in the Reno-Sparks area. 2 weeks ago, I got cold feet, and I said I couldn't possibly do this workshop, even though I had volunteered to do it. I was going to call the person in charge of all the workshops and tell her, sorry, I was insane when I signed up for it. I'm not going to do it because I was thinking about me, and that's my disease. It's all about me. And I thought, this is a we program. So, God, can you help me with this? Higher power, where are you? I can't do this alone. And then I thought, I have a food sponsor. So I twisted her arm so she wouldn't get the 2 week cold feet. She only had a day. Then I have an inventory step sponsor, inventory sponsor, and she had a day. Can't get too much cold feet. So this is a we program. I can do it with my food sponsor and my inventory sponsor. I can stay abstinent with all of you, but I can't do it alone. So I'm going to pass around two sets of pictures, the big set and the little set. So there's that, and here's those. My story has a lot of Eskimos. I followed my mother into this disease. My first diet, I was 13. My pictures will show you as a child I was normal, as normal as a nice Jewish girl can be. But I was told as soon as I hit puberty that I was fat and I wasn't okay because I had boobs and hips. And I listened to what other people had to say about me, and I believed them. Now, you can see in my pictures, I was a normal-sized child, I was a normal-sized teenager, and I was actually normal when we got married, because those funny hat pictures are our honeymoon pictures. But dieting started at 13. I did a whole lot of them. My original first disease is compulsive eating and obsession about food and weight. My second disease is codependency and people pleasing. And I met and fell in love with a drug addict. I didn't know how bad it was when I met him, but he liked me, so of course, I loved him. He loved me, and I was off and running. And I totally lost myself in that relationship and was going to college. And one of my classes said, you need to go to the family programs of these 12 steps so you can understand what these 12 steps are. So I went to my first 12-step meeting. And I turned to the person next to me and said something about I heard there was some family program for addicts, too. And she said, yeah, and I'm the speaker. Here she was at a different meeting. I'm sitting right next to her. She said she's the secretary of that meeting. It's in Santa Barbara at Cottage Care. Go right there this night. And I said, well, I'm only at this meeting because I'm at a class. I had to go because of a class. I don't really need to be here. And so when it got so bad that I was willing to be honest about I needed to be at the 12-step meeting for me, not the class, I started going. And I was honest about being that so far out of myself and addicted to another person. She gave me hope that there is some sanity in the world, and she gave me faith. Those are the first three disciplines, spiritual principles of the program, but I didn't do the fourth step, or I half-assed it, I can't remember. But I was still in what you would call a normal body, and still going to those other meetings and giving service. And then he died of an overdose of heroin, and I was devastated. And I remember having had a spiritual awakening in that pain, because at a couple of weeks after that, I thought I was all alone, you know, remember, because I had made him my higher power, and I thought I was all alone. And the real higher power said to me, you will never be alone. I am always here. And it was like, okay, I am going to be okay. I don't need to die because he died. I can continue to go to these 12-step programs even though he's gone, and I can continue to go for me. And then I moved, and I took the meeting with me. I started more meetings like that where I moved to. And then I don't know what it was, but I had always thought I was fat. I was always told I was fat. And I went back to dealing with my life problems with food. So I guess when you're young enough and you, I don't know what it was. But all I know is that I became what everyone had told me I was. And I became fat and fatter and fatter. And I went back to that self-hating and self-loathing, and I wasn't working any steps anymore. And I was still dieting. I work in the addiction area. I know these 12 steps. When I first came to recovery, they told you, you don't have to worry. And I said, what does that mean? You don't have to worry. Of course you worry. You're either in the past or in the future. You're never right here. They're telling me I don't have to worry. Okay, so how do you not do that? Well, I memorize the steps. You can't worry while you're trying to memorize something. And then the next thing I did when the worry started again was I recited those 12 steps. So I knew the 12 steps. I actually knew them by heart. But I didn't know how to apply them to my eating. And then I was told that sugar and flour, I went to a class, sugar and flour are addicting, and that if you want to recover, you need to not do that. Well, I can only hear half of that message at that time. And I stopped the sugar and got pregnant with our son 3 months later, and didn't eat sugar for a year and 9 months. But the disease was still rampant. I wasn't fat, I was pregnant. And I was going to eat whatever I wanted and pretend that I wasn't fat. I was pregnant. And for whatever reason, that not eating the sugar when I stopped being pregnant, some of that weight came off. I gained 55 pounds when I was pregnant. That weight came off. The other weight that I had on top of me didn't. And I did some more diets. Serious money in those diets. And there were some people, I was semi-successful, but never into healthy body weight, never back to normal body, whatever that means. But there was a lady there who couldn't. I did it for a year and a half, and she could do it for 3 months. Fast forward, she's in my parking lot at work. She says, "Do you remember me?" And I said, "That can't be you. You're skinny." She said, "Can you say that again?" I thought I just insulted her. I said, "What are you doing?" And she said, "See how." And I'm all, "See how what?" Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, how? "Oh, I tried that other anonymous meeting. I didn't understand how they did those steps. I know the steps. Remember, I memorized them. I don't understand how they do them." She said, no, just come to the meetings and you'll understand. And when I got to the meetings, I said, I think I asked her for a year. Where are those meetings? Wrote it down, lost the piece of paper. Because I was so scared. I didn't do it on purpose. I was just so scared. I had failed every single diet. And I thought I was a failure. And that if I tried see how and failed it, then I couldn't go on. Because there had to be an answer to my disease. I was wearing my disease on the outside. I was so ashamed. I had beaten myself up so much that I didn't believe anything was going to work. But she gave me hope. If she could do it, then maybe I can. Going back into the rooms 2 years later, I mean, it did. It really took me 2 years to get to that first meeting. But I was ready, and I was willing. And I got a sponsor. I got the food plan. I'm on medical abstinence. Medical abstinence means you take the food plan to your doctor or your nutritionist, and they write out what you're going to eat. You don't tell them what you're going to eat. They write it out. I have bad hyperglycemia. I was really scared. I wanted what she had, but I didn't know if I could physically do it. Again, a surrender. Gave the nutritionist the food plan. We went over it, and she told me how to eat, and that's what I did. Now, I'm a control freak, and I want to tell you what's right and wrong. And I also, when people call me for medical abstinence, have to say, I am not a doctor. You need to take it to your doctor. You need to ask your doctor to write, or nutritionist to write out the food plan and sign it. And that's what we'll go by. As long as it doesn't have flour and sugar in it, it's abstinent. The key to this program are the steps. We're talking about the principles, the spiritual principles. The key are the steps. And I was frightened of that inventory, but I was given the booklet to write, and it's one question at a time. Well, I remember how to do that. In the first 30 days, I wrote out my questions one at a time. So I was really scared, so I had to find someone to give my inventory to who had really lived life, because if I had given my inventory to my sponsor, she probably wasn't going to like me anymore, and she wouldn't sponsor me. That's my sick thinking. And I really needed her as my food sponsor. She couldn't go anywhere. She had to stay with me. I couldn't lose her because I couldn't lose this program. So I found someone who had lived life and gave her, it took 2 sessions, 2 hours on the phone to give her my whole inventory, because the spiritual principle of the fifth step is integrity. So that meant I had to get clean with all my secrets. Not just the little, that's all of it. The ones that you said you'd go to your grave with, all of them. She got them all. And then I had to become willing to look at myself and my character defects. And I have a lot of them. But I have to be willing to let them go. That was really hard. And so, again, this is a we program. I talked to some of the people at my meetings, and I said, I read this, I read that. They're still not going away. I'm working really hard to make my character defects go away. And she said, Lynn, step six says, sorry, I'm going to read it to you. We were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. You're forgetting the higher power in your working of the steps. It's like, oh, that's right. That's how I started this. I get into I, and I get scared. But when I bring the higher power in, and when I bring you all in, then I can work this program. I can do this life. I can let go of my character defects. The next one is humility. That's about always bringing your higher power with you in everything you do. One of the biggest miracles that I have found in this seventh year of being in the program is you can be upset about something, and I don't have to be upset about it because I have faith that my higher power is going to take care of you and me. I don't have to take care of you anymore. God is. And so you could be upset, and I don't have to be upset. I can stay calm. And if you remind me I don't have to do this alone, when I'm having challenges, then I can also be calm. This program is the only thing that has ever worked for me. And it's because I have Eskimos in my life. That first one who told me their see how. The next one who took my food every day. The next one who took all my secrets. And then I come here. And every time I've come to a world convention or an area assembly, I've heard what I needed to hear, and I take it with me. One other world, I was waiting for medical results. Did I have breast cancer or not? And while I was waiting for the pathology report, the speaker at the luncheon meeting was talking about remaining abstinence through breast cancer, through chemotherapy. So every time I am challenged with the issue in my life, thinking, I can't do this, where's the food? I have had another Eskimo in my life saying, this is what I did it abstinently. And then I think, okay, someone else. And to me, that's the love you all give me in the meetings, in the conventions, in the assemblies. The discipline is I write down my food every day and I give it to my sponsor. In maintenance, that's a miracle. I've been maintaining a 60-pound weight release for 5 years. That's a miracle. I just told you all the failures I had. I have maintained it. It's a miracle. Patience and perseverance, the 10th principle. Continuing to write down your food. Continuing to write the questions. I hate writing. I hate it. But I keep doing it because you taught me that's how I get well. Spiritual awareness, to continuing to put my higher power in my life. And I listen to these tapes from other conventions that I didn't go to. And I hear special gems, like when you get in the car, you say, God, you go first. I say prayers on the way to work. That spiritual awareness brings me the calm and the serenity. You know, yeah, maybe I liked that first Eskimo had lost her weight. But what I really liked was she was calm and serene. That's what I really wanted. And then the only way that this works is through service, the 12th principle. After you get your sponsor and you give away your 30-day questions, which I'm going to confess took me 60 or 90 days. You also get a sponsee, and you get a service position in a meeting. Because then I can lie to myself all the time. I did it for years. But I have to be accountable to you, my sponsor, my sponsees, and the group. So 3 meetings a week. So I can't be lying all that time, because that will eat me up. So with your support, I can give service. And then after a few years, next level of service. That's called intergroup. And our intergroup's, you know, 500 miles away, so we have to get on the phone. Willing to go to any lengths? Our intergroup meeting was a couple weeks ago. I tried to get to our intergroup meeting. My husband and I took the motorcycle down. We got flooded out in Death Valley. But I was willing to go to any lengths. And either I do it on the phone, or I try to get there every once in a while. And then the next level of service after intergroup is an area rep. So it's like, okay, my hand's going up. I want what you have. I like your serenity. You're an area rep. Okay, I'll be one. And then the next level of service is being a delegate to world. Okay, you have that, what I want. I'll raise my hand. You're doing it. Okay, I'll do it. I'm scared to death. What do you mean, be a delegate? And then there's more responsibilities. But those are the responsibilities that keep me absent, that keep me working the steps, that keep me working the questions, that keep me in these rooms. One day at a time with the help of a higher power and you, because this is a we program. We can all stay abstinent one day at a time and sane because of our higher power. But it's a we. I can't do this without you. So thank you for being here. And if anyone would like to share on their favorite spiritual principle, you need to sign the sheet right there and come up to this microphone. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Melissa, and I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Melissa.
For me, the most important principle is honesty. I grew up learning how to be a manipulator, and I lied my way through most of my youth and my young adulthood. I would, you know, lie about my life and what I had and what I didn't have, and I think ultimately what I really wanted was to be accepted. And I started in CHOW 2 years ago, and I released my weight rather quickly, and I was discovering that one of my biggest character defects that continued to follow me around was my honesty. And I relapsed in the program, and I caught myself off guard, and what I discovered was that I had been lying to myself all along, and I was so good at it that I convinced myself that I hadn't just binged on what I had just binged on, that I hadn't gone to the store and told my family that I had to get the newspaper. And and here I discovered, you know, that I could convince myself that I wasn't doing exactly what I just did. And it really scared me. I was afraid to tell my sponsor. I was afraid to let go of any of the commitments that I had. And I realized that I had let go of my contact with my higher power after I realized I had been lying to myself, and I had started to hear myself, and my negative thinking was just so at the forefront of my mind. And the moment I told my sponsor, and it was the biggest release that I ever had. And she told me that I'm going to be okay. She told me that I was okay, that I'm going to be okay. And for the first time in my life, I heard that I was going to be okay. And it seems like simple words, but it made all the difference to me. And I was really afraid that I wasn't going to be able to regain my abstinence. And so the fear and a lot of those negative thoughts had, you know, really kind of overtaken me. But what I realized more than anything was I had let go of the contact with my higher power. And that was why I was in the place that I was in. And so I continued right away to start to say the Serenity Prayer. And to this day, I recite it over and over and over. I go to bed every night and I just say it over and over. And I don't know what it is about it, but every time I hear, you know, grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. It's just, it really rings true that with my higher power, I can beat this disease. And with my higher power, I can be honest. And with the love and the support in these rooms and all that I learn by listening and watching others, I know that I can do it too. And so I'm just so grateful for this convention. It's just inspired me in so many ways. And thank you all for being here.
Good morning, one and all. My name is Marie R. I'm from the Dalles, Oregon, in the beautiful Columbia River Gorge. And hi, all of you. I'm so glad to be with you today. I was sponsored to be here this time. So thank you for my sponsors. And very moved. I had given up a week before the miracle. But the thing I want to share with you is that the ABCs of the program are I can't, he can't, and I think I'll let him. I've been a 12-stepper for a long time, the best part of 3 decades. And more is always revealed. It's one of my favorite one-liners. And when I was understanding that I had compulsive eating, I ducked and hid and ran and clawed, you know, big claw marks on everything. And it was my first and foremost addiction in my lifetime. I've been addicted to sugar since I was 2. If I had a nickel, I was gone to the store for those things and carried a normal weight for much of my adolescent life and young adult life. And the first weight loss I had was 40 pounds. The last one was 116. Lots of weight losses in between there. I've gained and lost as much as 400 to 500 pounds in the course of my lifetime. And I know that this disease is very progressive. Even in abstinence, it never takes a hiatus. Never. It continues on as if we had never stopped. Just like in alcoholism, I've had 25 and a half years sober. It's continued on, the disease has, as if I've never stopped. So I wouldn't be back where I was if I should pick up. I would be where I was, would be, if I had never stopped 25 years later. I would be, in a very short time, very dead. I've had lots of hurdles around staying abstinent in these last 2 years. I put back 40 pounds of that 116. I've had to be open, honest, and willing to share my successes and failures. I'm still here, and I was so grateful to hear what you said, Winnie. It's very moving. This disease has humbled me more than any other has collectively. And I know that this is the last stop on the block for me. I am clean today by God's grace, and I was doing a lot on my own steam, and it doesn't work. It really does not work. And I've known that because of other recovery areas of my life. My world is very chaotic and haphazard because of the work I do and the way that manifests. I never know when I'm working, if I'm working, and when I'll be working. So I have to be in a state of readiness all the time for one day or one week. It's bizarre. My life is bizarre. And people have said, well, maybe you should think about getting a different job. So I have. But for now, it hasn't presented itself. But suffice it to say, and I'm going to end with this, and I believe you have to have all of those pieces to get and stay here. And I'm a bridger. I've been a bridger since I first discovered it, because I only have one local meeting in my area in the beautiful Columbia River Gorge. And there's very actual real little recovery in that two-person meeting. And I'm dependent on the bridge. I'm grateful for the bridge, and I've met some incredible people, not the least of which is Sally from Santa Fe. Love her. Love her. Love her. And she has been as much a part of the adventure of recovery as losing the weight has been, and I love her immensely. And the things we've done, and I've been skyrocketed into the fourth dimension of living, not just because of CHAB, but because of people like her, who have also mentored me. I was a temporary sponsor for her. She's actually done more sponsoring with me than vice versa. I'm grateful for all the people that I've come to know on the bridge, Robin, so many who have stood by me and loved me unconditionally. I've never seen a greater love, unconditional love, than what I've found in this program. Bar none. Unconditional love like I've never seen, and I know the love of my higher power, and it's absolutely comparable. So the last thing I'll say is 7 P's. They are prior proper planning prevents piss poor performance. Thank you all.
I'm Judy, compulsive eater. I think all the principles are important. My little bit of defiance, I guess, is that it's not in the big book. It doesn't say exactly that these are the principles. And I think my higher power is open to performing any principles he wants for each of us individually if we need it for each step. But the one that speaks to me today is step 3, faith. Faith in action. So faith without works is dead. And by working these steps, I have come to know a faith that has made it necessary for me to perform actions. And only one of which is working the tools every day, because I feel they're my spiritual principles and spiritual ways of connecting with God and my higher power. And I'm at the point where I'm working on step 6 now, but if it hadn't been for my sponsor, who has allowed me to have the courage necessary to be to perform with integrity and to talk to people honestly about things, I don't think I would have the consistent abstinence that I have today. And it's because of all of you and the love that you have shown me and the unconditional support. God has saw to it that I will be moving from Phoenix, Arizona, which we just started groups there. We have like two or three meetings there. And I've relied a lot on the phone bridge meetings. But because of, I believe, my work in this program, and because of the ability that we have that's afforded to us with the phone bridge, I can go anywhere as a free person and be abstinent and remain abstinent without people, live people, even though I don't prefer it that way. And but I've heard enough people on the phone bridge meetings that have years of abstinence in remote areas and have no meetings. And it gives me the hope that I can do the same thing, and God has seen fit to provide me with a job in a very remote area. It's on an Indian reservation. I will be teaching second grade there, and the population themselves are dying of diabetes and alcoholism. And more than my education and my experience, I believe God is bringing me there because of my abstinence. And I would just ask for prayers, and that you, my name is Judy W., and for all the children and the people that I encounter. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Sherry, a compulsive overeater. First of all, thanks for sharing today. That was really awesome, the panel, and thanks everyone for being here today. The principle that I've been working on lately, I don't know if it's necessarily my favorite, but is spiritual awareness. And I'm so grateful for that because my sponsors along the way have always said to me, Sherry, you need to get a greater connection with a higher power, greater connection. Because that is the one thing that's going to be that moment before we take that first compulsive bite is all contingent on my spiritual condition. And so what I love recently, what people have said to me probably in the last year, I guess, is that God can sweeten my life and God fills me up. Now, and I love that feeling. Because I always look for food to fill me. And sweeten, you know, sweeteners and sugar, but sweeteners and in abstinence. And I get a little crazy with that, so I had to let that go by the grace of God only and a lot of people in these rooms who helped me out. And so anyways, on a regular basis, one of the things that I do is think about how God can fill me up. And the other thing is I love this saying is I put one hand in God and one hand in the program with you guys, and then I just don't have a hand to pick up that first compulsive bite. So, thanks.
So, I'd like to thank everyone for being here, because together we can do this. So, let's make a circle and say the serenity prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Keep coming back. It works if you work it, so work it because you're worth it.
Thank you all.
Thank you very much for sharing.